Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Sean O'Toole, founder and CEO of ForeclosureRadar.com. Prior to launching Foreclosure Radar, Sean successfully purchased and flipped more than 150 residential and commercial foreclosures, and he leveraged 15 years in the software industry. Sean used technology as a key competitive advantage to build his successful real estate investment track record, and now he's brought all those skills to Foreclosure Radar. Sean, thank you and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
You bet. Aaron has a favorite word for websites, and I know if I call somebody robust, it's not a compliment, but if you say something about a website's robust, is that a good thing?
I think so, absolutely.
I had never heard the word in a complimentary form before, but when Aaron's impressed with a website, it's robust, and Foreclosure Radar is very robust.
I like it. I'm very happy with that as a compliment.
You know, it seems, and maybe I just I haven't poked around enough in all the little cubbyholes, but I keep finding new stuff. Is that probably true for most people? If they don't stay on top of it, there's a new toy or a new twist?
Well, you know, it's as you know, there's an awful lot to real estate and the real estate business, and we tried to make a tool that would work for all kinds of different things. And so, you know, even ourselves find new ways to use it to go after new types of business and or have customers tell us something that we'd never thought of. And, you know, it's like, wow, that's brilliant. And you know, that was certainly the goal, was to create something that would allow people to find a way to use it that worked for them.
I noticed that you have a short sale section now where the people that are actually trying to get those accomplished are able to communicate with each other, which lenders are, you know, easy to use. And even there was a recording, I think, that was recently done where, you know, that was shared with other people. So that's a pretty useful forum for somebody to have access to.
Yeah, and that one's free and right off our main site in our learning center. We call it the short sale report. And we try to post up some information about each bank and, you know, links to where you get the package, the hardship letter and that kind of thing, as well as have a comment section where users can share information about each of those lenders, how they are to work with, and tips and tricks or problems.
You know, I think that's one of the things that just in general about the Internet is the nature of it being so inexpensive to access such a ridiculous amount of information. So like you mentioned, a lot of what's at your website is free of charge. And even what you charge is ridiculous. I know people, when they pay for websites, they probably, I don't know, maybe they're cheap, but they probably don't have an understanding of how much easier you've made the business. Do you ever, you know, we're in the trustee sale business. Do you ever get comments from people that are in the business or have been in the business for a long time, like, thanks a lot? Thanks a lot, Sean. You've made it very easy.
It's usually a double-edged compliment, especially from the ones that have been in the business before we existed. It's half of it is, you know, wow, you saved me a ton of time and, you know, a ton of labor and allowed me to expand and all of this. And you know, last year we bought 50 properties a month and made millions of dollars, and we used you as our primary system, which is just an awesome compliment. But it's usually followed by, you know, but we also feel like you ruined the market and you brought all these other people in, which, you know, so I get both ends.
Well, you know, I mean, years ago, and I never really was a full-time trustee sale buyer until Greg has figured it out along with you know, some of the tools that's been provided him. And, you know, you go to a sale and there were three or four people there and they had the same face every day. And now you go and there's probably 50 to 75 people and they change a lot. So I think people can get up to speed a lot quicker than they used to, but I don't know if they have any appreciation of how much work has gone into getting them there.
Yeah, you know, and I'd love to take, you know, credit for that, but I also think it was just an issue of the times. I mean, people shift to where the market and the opportunity is. And we went from a market where foreclosures didn't matter to, you know, one at the peak where they were the majority of the market in quite a few areas. I'm just looking at some stats we ran where you went from, in San Bernardino, you went from 90% of the market being, you know, traditional market sales with maybe 6% being flips and investor-run deals and 2% short sales to, you know, in 2009, 46% was REOs and 31% was regular market sales. So, you know, I think a lot of it was just, you know, out of necessity. We had a lot of builders that, you know, got pushed out of the building business and went to the foreclosure business, and a lot of commercial brokers that whose business has dried up and they still had access to capital. So I think a lot of it was just natural, and we were fortunate to be in the right place at the right time.
You know, I'm an investor, and so I look at your website for those reasons, but you have other customers, a customer base like the government. What would the government use foreclosure radar for?
Yeah, the first thing we saw them using for was mosquito abatement. And, you know, by finding these properties that weren't necessarily being maintained and the pools no longer being maintained, so they're using our website to search for swimming pools and foreclosure properties so they'd know to go treat them for mosquitoes. Later on, code enforcement, you know, a lot of the cities getting pretty active to try to keep light down, especially with these extended, the extension of the foreclosure process that we've seen over the last couple of years. You know, once somebody stopped making their payment, a lot of times they stop making repairs too. And, you know, it's, you know, in some ways it's been great that they've slowed down the foreclosure process. It's kept, inventory off the market and allowed people to stay in their homes longer, but those homes aren't getting repaired. And so code enforcement officers are using us to go look for light issues and try to be proactive about that.
And the code enforcement usually comes into play after the trustee sale or during the process?
It kind of depends on the county and the budget and, you know, and the rest. Some we've seen start right off at the NOD stage, and, you know, they'll go, you know, maybe take photos and stuff of the property at that point and then continue to monitor it. And, you know, if it goes downhill at any stage over the foreclosure process, they'll start enforcement actions.
Something I had never seen on the website was a wholesale buyers list. When did that come about?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the things we wanted to do, you know, kind of from the beginning is we've got all these incredible customers, you know, the most knowledgeable foreclosure realtors, some of the hottest investors, and we wanted to come up with a way to start connecting those folks.
Okay.
And so for all of our customers, we allow them to basically have a free advertisement that's out on our public website in something we call the Marketplace. And, you know, the idea was just to help connect folks and start, you know, allowing our customers to find each other and to find services. You know, we've got we've got investors that are willing to bid for others. And so there's a bidding services section, and there's folks that are in property management, which some investors might be interested in. Obviously, we've got a ton of realtors that are foreclosure experts, and they all get to advertise on this free foreclosure marketplace that's available to anyone.
And how long has that been around? Because I hadn't seen it until now.
Yeah, we probably haven't done a great job of promoting it.
No, that doesn't mean.
You know, I tend to be more of a product-centric guy than a marketing-centric guy. We're working to fix that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I think that feature's been out just about a year.
What happens when foreclosures, I mean, they really have been a dominant player in the last 5 years, but that's not typical California. You know, more typical California is a stretch of say 2000 to 2005 or six, where a trustee sale is kind of rare. Oh, I know there's always a certain number of foreclosures, but how radically does that change? And then how does that change a business model that really concentrates on that you know, that particular product? Yes.
You didn't honestly just call 2000 to 2006 normal, did you?
Well.
I'm kidding.
you're right. That was abnormal on the other side. You're right. Maybe I should have picked another time frame, but I didn't think you were counting foreclosures between 85 and 89.
I absolutely get your point. I was just having a little fun.
I know.
There's no doubt. You know, I believe real estate is cyclical, and at some point, there's no question that foreclosures will play a less dominant role. I mean, I think it's already clear that REOs play a less dominant role now than they did even 2 years ago. You know, so there's no doubt that'll change and will continue to change. You know, we went from 46% of the market being REOs in San Bernardino in 2009 to just 30% in 2011, and I think that'll be lower in 2012. So no question you're right there. And, you know, on the other hand, I think just the motivators and the players of who's in the foreclosure market change. In the 2004, 5, 6 time frame, you know, you get some of the big consumer foreclosure sites, which we focus on professionals, not consumers. You know, they had their best years in those years when there were the fewest foreclosures. You know, they had less expense because they didn't have to track as many foreclosures. And there was more people clamoring to invest in real estate and try to find a good deal. So, you know, there's two sides to that cyclicality.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. That's true. Now, you mentioned that you think San Bernardino will have less of a percentage of REOs. Is that for natural causes or induced causes?
there's a great question. I still believe that it's largely induced. You know, you still have a lot of folks underwater. We still have a lot of folks in the foreclosure pipeline. You know, but it's becoming less and less politically correct to foreclose. You know, and so banks are looking for every other alternative possible. The latest thing is this REO to rental program. You know, and the banks will blame regulations for delaying these things and not pushing them through. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's also good for their bottom line to not foreclose and to delay these processes for as long as possible. And I think we've seen that trend continue and grow. We are working through some of the problem as well. So, I mean, there are fewer people in foreclosure today than there were in or underwater than there were a couple of years ago.
Well, it's because we foreclosed on 2 million of them. I mean, not due to price increases. So that's due to they just got foreclosed on.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting. In one of the things I've been studying about deleveraging debt, you know, they're talking about the U.S. doing a really good job. And then in a little, almost like an asterisk, it said, oh, by the way, 86% of the debt reduction was just defaulting. So,
right.
You know, that's it is improving, but it's not necessarily because it's, you know, we're having price increases. It's one of the charts that
it's improving thanks to the strategic defaulters.
Okay.
Eliminating negative equity. It's a contrarian view for you, right?
Yeah. The real estate debt at the peak of the market, about how high was it and when was that peak of the debt?
Yeah, so we have good numbers nationally, not so good numbers that I found, you know, locally. But, you know, according to the Fed flow of funds, which the Federal Reserve publishes, we went from $4.5 trillion in mortgage debt in 2000 to $10.5, you know, at the peak. And we're back down to about $9.8. And I think that's a really good high-level gauge just to kind of see where we are in the problem overall, because if you think about debt as a percentage of income, and some will say as a percentage of GDP, but as a percentage of household income, and you look at the number of new households and the increase in household income over that time, I really think that number should probably closer to $6.5 trillion is where we should be back to if we wanted the same kind of level of home ownership that we had in 2000. And, you know, we're a long, long way from being back at that kind of debt level. And I even think that's still the heart of the problem with the economy, although I realize that most economists would disagree and say that it's jobs or something else. But so, hard for me to see how you have jobs when you have a consumer-driven economy and consumers are underwater in their homes.
And they have perhaps something like $3.5 to $4 trillion of too much debt.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because I talk to people and they say, "Oh, banks have already written all that off."
Well, you know, one of the great things about one of the interesting things about when banks write debt off, right, is it doesn't write it off on the homeowner's side.
No.
It's a one-sided write-off. Well, so it doesn't improve the consumer position at all.
And I really have serious doubt that anybody has written off $1 trillion of anything, even if they put all their piles together. That's a lot of debt.
Yeah, you know, and why would you need mark-to-model accounting? That Congress put, you know, the Fed, and then Congress put so much pressure on the Federal Accounting Standards Board to adopt if, you know, really all this stuff was written down to current market values. You know, they say that they've taken the write-downs, but it's the write-downs down to their, you know, fantasy values for these assets, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. When somebody wants to get into the business of trustee sales, for instance, what is the typical, rookie mistakes that you see that you go, oh boy, you know, you really don't want to make that one.
Yeah. So, obviously the biggest mistake in terms of cost is to buy a second mortgage that you think is a first mortgage. And, you know, the one thing I always really encourage anybody entering this business is to really take the time to learn how to do title research. You know, we regularly see our customers rely too heavily, you know, on our models. We guess at what the loan positions are, and we give you that information. It helps with searching and the rest, but we don't intend for you to buy based on that information.
Correct.
And we make that pretty clear with disclaimers and the rest. But some people, our models are pretty good, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they probably work for you. But, boy, if your first deal is that 1 out of 10 where our guess is wrong or there's something strange about the title, you know, that can be a very big loss. And, you know, we see other people, you know, they'll call somebody, junior customer service person in a title company. So there are some very, very senior customer service people in the title company I'd absolutely rely on, but there's some others that I wouldn't rely on. And, you know, they ask them, you know, what do you think this is? And they go, oh, that looks like a first. And that's not a way to do title research. And if you can't take the time to learn how to do it, you really shouldn't be buying at auction.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the point, is that this is really not a place for somebody that is going to give it a shot and really not become good at it before they show up for the first day. What's the likelihood of somebody about to make a mistake having somebody there say, you know, buddy, you're about to bid on a second, don't do that?
with there being a lot more people down there, you know, we see that I don't know what I call them, do-gooders, but, you know, the helpful folks more often. But I will tell you, early on in my foreclosure investing career, I did that for a newbie and, you know, saved him probably $150,000. And, you know, I was still a relative newbie. I'd been down there 6 months or so. And, you know, the other regulars almost lynched me.
Yeah, it's...
And they basically said, look, you know, more competition, there's not really enough business here to go around already. And by helping people out, you know, you saved him money, which means he'll be back here tomorrow. If he had lost the $150,000, we'd never see him again.
Yeah, I prefer your route to theirs any day. But I think that's why I was mentioning it, is that I actually did that on purpose one time to see if I did have any friends. I qualified intentionally for a second with my cashier's check, and two other guys qualified with me. And then when the opening bid, nothing was said. And one of the regulars came over to me. He said, what was all that about? And I said, I just wanted to see if you'd tell me. And he wasn't. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually a really good point, is, you know, you have to qualify to bid beforehand. And, you know, you will actually see some of the pros sometimes go qualify for things they think people might be confused about to try to suck them in.
Wow.
And I've even seen pros knowingly bid to a point where, you know, they had a $50,000 loss against somebody trying to increase their loss, the other person's loss, because they realized the person didn't know what they were doing.
So
rather than letting them take a small loss, they actually took the risk of losing tens of thousands of dollars just to see that person's loss be larger.
Wow. That's pretty rude, but I understand where they're coming from, but I just disagree with it personally. But one of the things that's really changed, Sean, and this is not the way it used to be at all, is that before there was real equity. So when you're foreclosing in the 90s, people had older loans and there was equity. And in this cycle, real equity is virtually non-existent. And so you end up having something called a drop bid. So if you asked somebody in the 90s that attended trustee sales on a regular basis, you know, did you check out the drop bids? He would not have that vocabulary in his mind at all. And now all of a sudden it's the entire business. So, you know, that's drop bids before your site provided the service. I mean, how were somebody finding out the drop bids?
Well, you know, largely just by attending the sale, and
or calling,
you attended the sale, and or you're calling and checking ahead of time and trying to find out. But you know, really, pre-announcing opening bids is something. You know, I'm not saying we had anything to do with it, but that's really something that, you know, by and large, just started fairly recently. You'd occasionally see it beforehand. But, you know, nobody even thought to inquire as to what the opening bid was because, you know, up until 2008, the opening bid was the amount due. That made, by the way, 2007 and 2008 a terrible time to be, and early 2008 a terrible time to be in the auction business because, you know, everything that had an opening bid that was above the market value.
Yeah, and that's why the REOs were so overwhelming is because they were taking back, 95-99% of the inventory they could have sold to somebody with a cashier's check.
The peak month was 97% went back to the bank.
Wow. I remember in San Bernardino one time, I just happened to look in the MLS, and it was so ridiculous that I took the time, and probably because I had a boot camp, there were 25 properties per $1,000 increment all owned by lenders. So, you know, 101 had 25, 102 had 25. It was ridiculous. So obviously, you know, you had your way if you were buying through the MLS at that point. So,
you know, and actually right at that time is when we coined the term shadow inventory. And at that point, we were talking about bank-owned properties. And for all those that were listed in the MLS, there was at least that many, or not more, that weren't listed in the MLS. But that bank-owned shadow inventory was pretty short-lived because once the banks realized they needed to correct prices to what people could afford without the crazy financing, that shadow inventory disappeared. You know, in a lot of places we went from 20 months of inventory to 4 months of inventory in a, you know, few-month period.
Well, that's still a very misunderstood term, and we only have a minute left, but I will, in our next segment, I think we'll talk about that because the definition has shifted to the what you have just mentioned, you know, the REOs that were not being marketed to something else. And it's still a pretty misunderstood word. I was just in front of the mayor and the city council in Riverside, and somebody brought up the shadow inventory, and his emphasis was, you know, these banks are holding on all these properties, and he was emphatic about it, that they had not done, you know, what they were, you know, supposed to do as far as putting up for sale. And, you know, it's a little hard to deal with somebody that's that emphatic with a chart, but, you know, it is helpful to say, okay, that's probably an older story, but I think he's got a point that there's something called shadow inventory, but it's changed definition. Sean, why don't we go ahead and give your website?
Yeah, foreclosureradar.com, and we're helping realtors and investors and government agencies track foreclosures in California, Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, Washington.
And the cost of this?
$49.95, and then there's a discount for members of the California Association of Realtors.
All right, Sean, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.